It is Saturday, May 12th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today, we focus on this week's Electronic Entertainment Expo, E3. During the second half of the show, we'll invite your questions and comments on technology.
GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo, streaming live and podcasting at kusp.org. I'm your host for the next hour, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP.
The human race is underway this morning along West Cliff Drive in Santa Cruz. Participants raise money for scores of Santa Cruz County nonprofit organizations, including KUSP. Registration is open at Natural Bridges State Park, and the event continues through this morning.
Today on GeekSpeak, we're talking about this week's announcements and equipment and games and all that stuff that happened at E3, the Electronic Entertainment Expo, with Dee Dee Hubbard, who is our New York correspondent who traveled to the show. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join a conversation with questions and comments about technology. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can contact us now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Imagine that. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. Welcome to GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell. The geek in the air room with me is Miles Elam, and over the phone is Dee Dee Hubbard. Geeks, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning. I do have to say it's funny. Our New York correspondent who was in L.A.
I know, it's kind of ridiculous. Dee Dee, how was your trip to Los Angeles?
I am so tired. I feel like I flew myself.
Where are you right now, Atlanta?
I am in Atlanta. My sister is graduating from Spelman. Shouts out to my sister, Leah.
Congratulations.
See, you're so tired. See, this is why you don't walk. Don't walk next time, Dee Dee.
I think she flew with her arms. let's start with the geek news, and Dee Dee, we'll let you a second to try to wake up. I know you don't drink coffee. That's the problem. Miles, we'll let you start with the news, sir.
Okay, we've talked about voting machines in the past, electronic voting machines.
Yes.
And our personal favorite has always seemed to be Diebold.
Your tongue is stuck right in your cheek when you say that. Go on.
And it turns out there's yet another major security flaw found in Diebold voting machines.
Oh, surprise.
Yeah. But this one isn't so much, oh, there's a way to intercept communications or somehow get the data off of the machines or someone after voting was complete get the machine. This is a vulnerability where someone who has a PCMCIA card, in other words, a type of card that you plug into many laptops,
mm-hmm.
And knows just, you know, a tiny little bit about how the system works, they can press a publicly exposable reset button on the box. In other words, you walk up to the voting machine, anyone, anywhere, can walk up to a box and hit a reset button. The system effectively reboots. You have this PCMCIA card plugged in, and there are ones that adapt to talk to USB drives, for
example.
What
can they do?
Reprogram it to have whatever information they want.
And
in other words,
that hard?
Reset counts.
Change the votes.
Yeah, change the votes.
So what you're saying is
accept votes in certain so that votes
a
for certain
scrupulous
ones
person
counted.
Could go into a voting booth, their voting booth, and reprogram
an unscrupulous person.
Oh, that's true. An unscrupulous. Thank you very much. and reprogram the machine without any prior security codes or anything like that.
Right.
Just a little bit of knowledge, which is now public and knowledgeable.
Right.
Or known.
Well, some knowledge about how the system is organized, and then just knowing where to... It's literally like a reset button on the computer, where you press
right.
And it's a little bit of resistance, and
right.
It goes in about a fifth of the way, and then system restarts.
So has anyone actually done this? Do we know if anyone's done this?
How would you tell?
Good point.
Okay.
So basically, if your district supports electronic voting, and they're using Diebold systems, you should until you should
request
stop.
Request a paper ballot?
Yeah. Request a paper ballot.
Yeah. Right. And the thing is, I personally am an advocate of electronic voting machines for various reasons. Well, because I'm a geek, because it has some accessibility advantages. There are advantages to the technology.
Sure.
But
if they all worked well, we'd be a better society. Right.
But boggles my mind is that we are still focusing on these bad versions of the voting machine. Like these bad designs. I don't understand.
And the thing is, it's not that complicated. I mean, it's a complicated issue. Mind you, they're programs and such. But we've had ATM machines for years, and they don't have these kind of errors. And they're just as complicated.
Well, I've been hearing some things contrary to that. But
for ATM machines?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's a whole other show.
All right. Well, thank you, Miles, on keeping us abreast of evil Diebold. I shouldn't say that. You know, I redact that statement. The Diebold.
Retract that machine.
Thank you.
Yes, it's...
I think you should be speaking for me today, Miles. So, Dee, you got some non-E3 news for us before the news segment? Or do you just want to do E3 news?
I can jump right in whenever you guys like.
Well, you can give us why don't we just start, you know, kind of mixing it up? Because yeah, that's what we're doing. Tell us about something that happened in E3.
Oh, well, the price point for the PlayStation 3 was announced. There's actually going to be a two-tiered scheme. There's going to be one... system available with a 20 gig drive for $500, $499, and then another one for 60 gigs for $600. Although there are some other differences that are coming to light as more news comes in. The difference between the lower cost one and the higher cost one, there won't be any flash memory, so no SD, compact flash, any kind of flash memory cards like that. No built-in Wi-Fi, so no 802.11b or g.
And this is just on the lower end model?
Yeah, the lowest end model. And no HDMI, so no HD digital audio video out.
Okay. But the higher-end version has all those things?
The higher version has all those things, and it's unsure whether or not you'll be able to upgrade that. So if you go in for the lower price point, which I find it really hard to say lower when it's $500, but the lower price point, you're getting stiffed out of a couple
hardware.
Right, now,
this is just being a computer now. Like, the previous models of a PlayStation didn't have a hard drive. In fact, most consoles don't have a hard drive.
But now this is a hard drive and a high-definition DVD player. Or at least the higher expensive one. What's the expensive one? How much does that run?
$599.
Oh, well, so they're both around $600. Yeah. So there's not really much of a difference. But, Dee Dee, this thing, let's just talk about a PlayStation. Traditionally, the PlayStation is a game console. You'd hook up to your television, be able to play computer games or video games and such. And the newest one, and this PlayStation 3 is the most recent version. It's not actually out yet, but they're announcing the costs for it, which is in the $500 to $600 range. And the more expensive one is one of the first time of home entertainment system you can buy that also does HD TV. So it's kind of like a... entertainment box. Would you say that's true?
Well, both Microsoft and Sony are going for the digital convergence in your home kind of thing, where they want it to be a media system. In fact, Sony and probably Microsoft too would get upset if you just called it a game console.
Right. It's the media.
They're specifically trying to, you know, integrate lots of online features, media features, which is why not having a flash memory might be detrimental to that. I mean, but you can always probably have an external peripheral for that one.
But you're basically saying be able to take your camera and hook up to it so you can load your pictures onto
it. Your iPod.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Miles, you have a home entertainment system that you built from scratch using open source stuff and using hardware that you had to purchase and some that you got for free from friends.
The entertainment center is actually all hardware that
okay, so about how much have you spent on that? And that doesn't do HDTV.
Actually, it doesn't. Well, it has a DVI output.
Okay.
So, I guess it could be...
Yeah, it's technically... okay.
High definition, but... I'm trying to think now. Probably around $450.
Okay. So, even at a low volume of one, you're able to beat that price.
Well, the thing is, it's a lot of extra legwork. A lot of extra effort. I've had to... You know,
well,
first off,
granted,
have the knowledge,
but I'm just saying that you got a system that has a DVD player, and you got a system and probably doesn't have a Blu-ray or HD DVD player, which these ones will have.
Right.
But you were able to build by yourself, buying through like companies like Santa Cruz Electronics or online, a full system at less than the price that the PlayStation's coming out with, and they're doing mass volume. So somewhere in there, we're not getting why
the PlayStation's going to have
technology.
A much
technology. They're using Blu-ray for HD DVD quality.
And the processor's a specific processor.
HD. If you went out and bought, we can't actually buy a Blu-ray player right now, but you could buy an HD DVD, the competing technology mm-hmm. right now. And those are above $1,000 right now. So.
And a PlayStation has much better video than my player does.
Right. Well, we could go through all the specs on the PlayStation and such, but so did you see it in action, or is it just vapor?
Oh, yeah. You could walk right up to their booth and play things like Gran Turismo 4, Virtua Tennis 3.
And what do you think?
It's pretty.
Yeah.
And it's also pretty much the same as PlayStation 2. I think it's a really good time to have a PlayStation 2, actually. There are really a number of games that I enjoyed that are coming out soon.
So one of those things where the cutting edge, the most expensive, isn't necessarily the best investment at this point.
And PlayStation 2, I mean, I'm thinking about going out and getting one. The 2, not the 3. Because not only do you get the huge catalog of PlayStation games, PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2, but... that's all done in hardware, whereas PlayStation 3 should be able to play the earlier PlayStation games, but it's all done in software, so I'm not sure how that's going to work out yet.
Okay, thank you. We're going to keep going with E3 news and such, but I'm going to let Miles come back in with another story because he's prepped. So, Miles?
This has absolutely nothing to do with gaming.
I understand. That's okay. Why I'm doing it, because
all right.
At least half of the people
there's
listening
there's a New Zealand company that has successfully turned sewage into biodiesel.
Now, is this a game? Sorry. human sewage?
Yes. And what they're doing is growing algae in sewage ponds.
Cool.
And there are certain breeds of algae that will... have up to 50% of their body mass being oil.
Right.
And
so they're farming gas?
They're not doing it with gas. It's actually making a...
diesel oil.
Yeah, and a diesel oil.
So biodiesel from human soil. That sounds great. It sounds perfect because we're eating all this horribly fat, gross food from fast foods, right? So our output is probably pretty high on what this algae needs.
Right. Well, this is what makes this a big deal is that this is the first commercial production of biodiesel from algae outside of a laboratory.
Oh, really?
So
I thought this had been done. I guess the most of them are just like lab experiments. When you say outside a
wild algae outside of a laboratory.
Okay. Because, the laboratory can actually be outdoors. Right. So,
yeah. Not
saying outside.
In a petri dish or
right. Even test ponds. There are test ponds for laboratory test ponds that are outdoors and everything that they try this with. But so you're saying this is in at location because, how else?
And the company claims to be able to produce at a rate of at least 1 million liters of fuel every year.
On how much people? I mean, what's the sewage pond sizes? You know what I'm saying? Like, the population of 4 million can produce 3 gallons of oil. That would be kind of depressing.
No, it definitely will not take the place of foreign oil. Not just overnight, but
it will allow us to stop using coal, right?
Well, not so much.
Not
but at the
all.
Same time, you need to deal with sewage.
Sure.
And a lot of times what we do with sewage is just try to treat it so it doesn't cause
any
toxicity. So it's
not dangerous and then throw it in the ocean, right?
But this is actually using that biomass for something productive. It does have the drawback that you are still emitting carbon into the atmosphere.
That's one thing people say all these wonderful things about biodiesel, but really it's still burning oil and it's still causing problems.
Well, except for the fact that when you have things like algae, to some extent, but also things like corn, stuff like that, those are taking CO2 out of the atmosphere.
So it might
so
be
it is
a closed
loop. Cycle.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This one, because you're using a base of sewage, chances are it's not going to be a closed loop. You're going to have an excess of CO2. But compared to taking oil out of the ground, it's much better.
Sure. Miles, thank you very much for that. I'm sorry that it wasn't a gaming topic, but no. Thank you very much for keeping us abreast of that. And that study happened in New Zealand?
It's a company in New Zealand, yes.
Okay. And are they doing it in New Zealand? Do you know?
Yes, they are.
Let's keep on top of that.
Rural-based Aquaflow Bionomic.
You know what I haven't been doing, which we need to do this. I'll drive by a sewage treatment plant. I'm like, I need to have the people that work there on the show and talk about how the process works.
We talked about that a couple of years ago, and then we just forgot, didn't we?
Yeah. Oh, well, okay. Some legwork.
We are
some
bad
journalistic
men.
Legwork.
We are
that's
bad
right.
Men.
Instead, we just, when Didi goes to E3, we're like, Didi, come on the show and talk. So, Didi, what's your next story?
Well, I could talk forever about Nintendo's offering, but I'm trying to be more fair and balanced. fair, balanced, maybe not so, but like the general impression of Nintendo's booth was that it stole the show, so you don't have to take my word for it. But
the
there were a lot of interesting things going on.
Now, the Nintendo booth, when E3 opened, there was a mad rush to the Nintendo booth.
Oh, yeah. Every day there was a... The line was at least an hour long, if not longer.
Somebody
on the last day, the morning of, when they opened the doors, there was a stampede.
And actually, you sent us a clip of that stampede, and I went ahead and linked to it from our show page. So go to geekspeak.org and click on today's show, which is the 13th, and take a look at the video. It's pretty funny. It's linked over to YouTube, but it's a funny little thing. And including some of the links that are up on today's show page, let's see. You made a blog entry about your experience at E3. If people are more interested in Dee Dee's thoughts and such, you can go to geekspeak.org and the Stampede to Nintendo booth. And then Wii. So, Dee Dee, your blog entry talks a lot about Wii, W-I-I. What do you think?
Well, Wii isn't just about me. It's about us. There's a lot to say about Wii, and I will skip all the jokes on the name, just that it's aimed at everybody. So
you mean from now on you'll skip the jokes on the name?
for everybody out there who's wondering what the heck we're talking about with PlayStation HD and all this other stuff, Wii might actually be the console that, you know, turns them back into gaming, you know. It's really approachable. The controller is just like kind of a small TV remote, but it knows where it is in space. So you can point it, you can twist it, you can swing it, you can bat it, you can pretend like you're bouncing a basketball with it. I mean, seriously, it's really versatile. And for the most part, it only has two main buttons. So for all those people who are like, this game has too many buttons, I don't know what I'm doing, like... this, you know, people use their grandmothers a lot, geeks do, to describe how easy things are, but grandmothers could do this. There was one game, which is really intuitive, just pick it up and go right at it, that a lot of people really enjoyed, Wii Tennis. So you're just sort of swinging the controller, just as if you had a tennis racket in your hand, back and forth, and a lot of people found that to be really fun.
So it's a really interactive controller for the new Nintendo box, which is called Wii.
Yes.
And they are focusing on gaming. They're actually changing the way games are played. Normally you've got this thing that basically thumb pads, though this remote can be used as a thumb padding thing. Its real clarity is that you can use it as a physical object. So, did you play Wii? Did you play the system?
Oh, I played as much Wii as I could.
Did you play tennis?
I didn't actually get a chance to play tennis, but I did play Duck Hunt.
Ah, great. Killing animals. That's great, Dee Dee. Uh-huh. And how was the controller, and how was the experience?
I had a lot of fun. I even got to play Metroid Prime 3, which, for the more hardcore gamers, is Nintendo's take on first-person shooting with this new controller. So... your typical kind of running around and, you know, killing people, but you actually get to point and look with the controller, so you're sort of pointing at the screen, and there's an attachment called the nunchuck, which has your traditional analog stick, so it can move in the 360 degrees of freedom in your other hand, and so you move your character with the analog stick. And you aim and look with the pointer.
The wand thing.
So I shot some video, a lot of video of this, because it's really hard to describe in words.
Are you going to tease us with that video at some point?
I worked on it late into the night, and I don't know if it's ready for prime time yet, but I will try to get it up as soon as possible.
Okay, well, we'll link it to the page when we do. Dee Dee, you play the new PlayStation 3, and you played Wii, Nintendo's offering. What are your thoughts about them, comparatively?
Comparatively, I think that since Microsoft launched the 360 last year, and PlayStation's a little bit behind on that, and they're so similar, graphics-wise, and kinds of games that they'll have, that Microsoft kind of stole a lot of the wind from Sony's sale. And so that left a big opening for Wii to come in and, like, really shock people. And I think that they've really done that, because the games are all enormously fun. And I mean, I could talk. You know, the controller, it opens up a huge playing field. I mean, I played this Tony Hawk game, Tony Hawk's the Downhill Jam, and I'm a big Tony Hawk fan. I mean, I've been playing it.
And Tony Hawk's a
skateboarding game. And so you can control which way your character turns by sort of rotating, twisting the controller left and right as you're going downhill, and use the buttons to control the tricks and jumps that you do. And it works really well for, like, doing sharp turns and, you know, twisting around. And there's another game which uses that a lot, actually two, that I saw there, Excite Truck. So if you remember Excite Bike from the original Nintendo, now they have Excite Truck. So when you actually go over the jumps, how you balance the controller in your hand, it affects how your truck lands in space. So you can accidentally, if you go too far forward, you might do like a flip, or if you can try to, you know, adjust, tweak it so you get that perfect landing and keep your speed.
It is interesting. It is really hard to describe the controller and the experience of the game. But from your take, are you going to see people gaming in these console games where their bodies are more active because of this?
Well, a lot of people were, I mean, if you remember, I mean, I have memories of people when I was a kid who used to move the controller as they jumped with Mario,
sure,
hoping that extra, you know, 6 inches they lifted the controller would help him get
right
to that next platform. And now you can map that into the game, and that's amazing.
All right. So your take on it, you like it?
I like it a lot.
All right. Let's give you a chance to mention something else that you liked at E3.
Well, I checked out some PC games.
Okay.
And there's a new version of LEGO Star Wars 2, which was really cute.
LEGO Star Wars 2?
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a LEGO Star Wars 1.
There is.
So you're playing a LEGO character in
you
Star
play,
Wars
You universe? Play through the Star Wars series, but with LEGO characters.
Okay, that's wonderful. So is it fun?
It was fun. And I got to play with the lightsaber and use the Force and say cheesy quotes and things, and it made me feel better about Star Wars for a minute. It's still kind of a sore spot.
Episode 3 kind of sapped your will to live, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, Didi, thank you so much for going down to E3. We'll continue this discussion in the second half of the show, but I do want to invite people now to give us a ring if they'd like to join the conversation. Ask Didi about Electronic Entertainment Expo, about games in general. Didi's kind of our expert. And the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, Notary Public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com.
KOSP co-sponsors Esalen Gazebo's Gazebo Learning Project, presenting Experience the Magic Outdoors, a family event featuring barbecue, the Banana Slug String Duo, face painting, Brazilian dancing, live auction, and children's games. Sunday, May 21st, at the Henry Miller Library in Big Sur. For more information, please call 667-3026 or go online to esalen.org, esalen.org.
You're listening to GeekSpeak. Our phone answerer and fellow web geek, Rick Philman, awaits your call with questions and comments. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can use the internet. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Let me clarify what we'll take on calls. We will take any call that you'd like to make. So if you've got a problem with your computer, you got some questions about what kind of games you should invest in, whatever, because we're kind of doing a gaming show or at least an entertainment show, you're welcome to call us up. In general, we're here to help. So you can cry on our shoulder, and we'll tell you that you should have backed up your data if you'd like. You're welcome to give us a call on any question you'd like about technology. Again, the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. One more time, nice and slow, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go through email. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us.
GeekSpeak is supported by Cruise.io Internet, offering DSL, broadband, computer rentals, and tune-ups. Cruz IO's retail stores in downtown Santa Cruz and Watsonville. More information can be found online at cruzio.com or by calling 459-6301.
You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. That was Miles Elam. And on the phone, we have Dee Dee Hubbard, our New York correspondent, who happens to be in Georgia. We're taking calls and questions about technology right now. Rick's taking people's calls. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're also going to continue our discussion about E3, but since we've got him, let's take him. From Santa Cruz, Jerry, welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question?
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your question, Jerry?
I have a question about security and file sharing.
Okay.
I was talking with my son the other day because he does file sharing through LimeWire, and I was saying, you know, young people seem to have the highest risk of security problems because of file sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that what he had done is that he had set his uploading rate to zero from our computer to others. And he said he felt that covered it. What do you think?
Not at all. I mean, it's like your car seems to be having a problem. It's okay, I painted it. I mean, it's completely different things. Uploading, when you're doing file sharing like this, means that, I mean, I guess from a security perspective, that you're not sharing files with people, therefore you're not infringing on copyright, and therefore someone couldn't necessarily sue you and win. I guess that's what he's protecting you with. Basically, LimeWire and
Not very well.
LimeWire and other services like that allow people to share files in mass. And the way they do it, basically, it's a distributed network where everybody that participates actually is an uploader and a downloader. So if you want a file as you run your client, you download it, and while you download it, other people connect to you and upload it so that the process is shared among lots of people. BitTorrent's a very successful process. This it's better than LimeWire. In any case, what he has done is said, I'm going to participate in the network by copying files at my discretion, but I'm not going to participate by sharing them. Therefore, he's damaging the process in which the sharing takes place and kind of breaking the system. Additionally, the security issues really have to do with taking applications or anything you don't know about, putting it on your computer, and then running it. That is the way you propagate problems.
A lot of programs actually have a problem where, in addition to the download, those download packets are causing buffer overflows in the program or finding some defect in the program. So it's not even so much what you're downloading in terms of the target file,
right,
but rather it may even be taking over the PDP application.
Right. He's talking about point-to-point. Right.
Peer-to-peer.
Peer-to-peer, thank you.
So they may or may not be able to get information of mine that's on the computer, but they could destroy the computer in other ways.
No, that's... Well, they won't be able to get files that you have been downloading and theoretically uploading. They won't get copies of those, but those aren't yours anyway. I mean, you got them from somewhere else.
Will they be able to see my tax files on my computer?
If your son or anybody using your computer downloads an application that specifically designed to do that, yeah.
That and
that's normally called spyware.
Peer-to-peer applications are commonly set up so that you have a shared folder.
Yeah.
Or shared series of folders. Some of them will actively look out for MP3s on your system and try to find them.
Let me clarify. Like if your son is like downloading media files, which are like JPEGs, movies, okay, MP3s. It's nice that you're. I mean, first off, it's illegal to download copyrighted material and sharing in that way. Some corporations, lots of money, can potentially sue you. In any case. Downloading those things, normally they are playable files that you don't need. They're not an application. And therefore, they're just a document that doesn't actually take over the process of your computer. It's actually read, like a Word document, right?
Right.
So those files are safe from the perspective that when you run them, you're running your native application that then opens that file. And theoretically, you're safe in doing that. So you're not going to get a virus or something like that. So you want to be very careful not to download executable things and run them through shareware applications of that nature, because you don't know who wrote the application or who modified the application, and it could have a virus. So that's one aspect of it is getting infected. And there's no safe bet, but make sure you have virus protection and, a virus protection application, and make sure that you don't download applications, but you just download JPEGs and MP3s and movies. Now, once you've done that, you're relatively safe in that regard. And the thing that Miles is talking about is that the application, the LimeWire application, could have a bug in it. And a lot of people are using it. And it's possible that someone could be causing packets or causing data to transfer that will take advantage of the bug that it has and therefore getting your system that way. Just like we say, be careful when using an Explorer, it's got a bug. Be careful when you use this app, it's a bug. Make sure you patch it. lots of applications have bugs. And these ones that are a small volume, you might not hear about on GeekSpeak. We won't tell you that LimeWire 7.2 has a bug like this.
Right, and the more popular an application gets, the more the bug will
be take advantage of.
Yeah, or
but also fixed.
Serious.
Yeah. So, are you safe? No, you're using a computer connected to the internet. It's not perfect, but I would say you're
also using something for a network to download material that you legally aren't.
That's right.
Allowed to have. So the company you keep.
Yeah,
bear that in mind.
That's exactly true. The last bit of that is changing your upload speed to zero. Only protects in the sense that the shared folder that you actually are like downloading things to, other people can't upload them. That aspect is not protecting your safety at all. You could, of course, hopefully use that attribute to say that you didn't, when you're a lawyer and you were trying to fight off this large corporation, you could say that you didn't participate in the network, you didn't share this to other people, you just took it. And never watched it, so it's okay. But I think that any lawyer is going to tell you that that's not a very strong case.
And my friend Alex brings up a very good point, which is it could also be a hacked copy of the peer-to-peer application itself, a hacked copy of LimeWire, so that it looks and acts like LimeWire normally does, but has some other feature to it. So also make sure that you're getting your software from a trusted source.
Yeah. I recommend looking at BitTorrent. I think BitTorrent's process, it makes a lot of sense. From a network perspective, it's better traffic management than like LimeWire. And there's a lot of really good reasons for BitTorrent, legal reasons for BitTorrent. People are using it all over the place. In fact, I think this last week, a major company just announced a deal with BitTorrent for television shows. So you're seeing BitTorrent being used a lot. It looks to me, BitTorrent doesn't say this directory is shareable to anybody. It more says, here are the files that I am currently sharing. And it seems a little safer in that regard that you kind of manage your list of files that you want to share.
And,
as well as download.
And just to be completely honest, I mean, how much time are you spending trying to get this done and spending time with the computer? And how much does a CD or DVD cost? Like, think of the opportunity cost as well. For young kids, it's usually an easy choice when time is money, but not if all that you have is time.
Yeah.
But if you're an adult, I mean, come on.
Right. Go down to your video store and rent a DVD.
Yeah, no, I'm not interested in it for myself. It doesn't matter.
But I think you're relatively safe. Are you on a Mac or a Windows machine?
Mac.
Uh-huh. You're going to be fine from viruses. No one's going to write anything that's going to take over your computer.
You know, someday someone is going to do the Mac and kill us all.
Well, at least damage our data or get
something. Yeah, or it'll cook us breakfast.
It'll be our own avian.
You know, one thing you can do that will really make this a lot better for you, since you're on a Macintosh and you're assuming running OS X, make a special account, make your own user account for your son, and have your tax files and stuff not on that account, but on the other account your home directory.
We are set up that way.
You're fine. Because he doesn't even have access to read the tax documents, his account.
As long as he's not an admin.
As long as he's not an admin, which he probably is. So you could say, if you want to use these applications, when you're running them, you got to turn off your admin access.
Okay.
That's one way to go.
Okay.
All right.
Good. Thank you much.
Thank you, Jerry, for the call.
Bye.
Jerry brings up a really good point. Even though there's no issues with viruses for Macs right now, as we say all the time, it's eventually, it will happen. And we're going to go ahead and take on other calls. From Salinas, Richard, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hi, you're on GeekSpeak. What's up?
Hi, I was intrigued with Dee Dee's comments about HDTV and gaming consoles, and I'm looking to invest my annual decade investment in video technology.
Get Betamax.
I would have gone Betamax, but it shut down before I could buy it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Now I'm thinking about, you know, what's the best investment for gaming, HDTV, and I don't know if DVD fits in that mix, but all of, you know, the video stuff on the market. I like to play games, but I never have time to do that, but when I do, I really love really fascinating games. Yeah. So it's my time to spend that $2,000, $3,000 on all this stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, could I buy like a low feature monitor, HDTV monitor, if there's such a thing, and then have the gaming console provide all the features, plus gaming, plus DVD, plus, you know, cook my meal at the end of the day.
Okay, Dee Dee, you got the question. What do you think?
It really is going to be a really great holiday season for all this, because Nintendo and Sony and Xbox 360, they'll all be out right about then. And LCD prices on TVs have been dropping steadily. And HD content is popping up all over television now and movie channels. And I love my HD TV.
Well, Didi, let's say for Thanksgiving you get $5,000 and told specifically to get an HD home entertainment system. What do you do? What do you go about?
Really?
What's that?
$5,000, really? You're not going to take that back?
No, we'll go with $5,000 from Miles. He's going to give you $5,000 in November. So what are you going to buy for yourself?
I'd probably go either a nice DLP TV.
That's a type of television, not an LCD, but a DLP.
I would pick up Nintendo's console, even though it's not HD content available.
The Wii?
Yeah.
Does it have a DVD player in it that is going to be high def?
Oh, yeah.
Does it do high def DVD?
No, that's the one thing about Wii.
Doesn't do high definition.
That's one striking difference between that and the other two next-gen consoles, is that Nintendo is specifically targeting the gaming aspect, uh-huh. and they're kind of, you know, they want to keep it small, they want to keep it cheap.
Is it cheap?
It's, right now, the rumors, which I think
are accurate.
You know, they're fairly accurate right now. They're aiming at $200 and $250.
So like half the price. Half the price of the PlayStation, for example.
Right.
That's pretty good.
Well,
but it doesn't...
Like the 10-year thing. The 10 years, you know, if I'm going to do this, next time I do this will be 8 or 10 years from now. So, you know, because DVD will be a dud in 10 years, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but the DVD content you have will be backwards compatible. So the thing is, Didi, once you've done that, you got your high-def TV, you've got your Wii, because it's really cool and a great gaming console, then what are you going to do for HD content? Are you going to wait until November and see what's on the market and buy a home entertainment unit that has surround sound and all that?
I think it's way too early for most cautious people to choose between HD DVD and Blu-ray.
Because you might get stuck with Betamax. One of them's going to win, one of them's going to fall.
Right. I mean, Sony is tipping the scale a little bit with putting Blu-ray in PlayStation 3. And up until a week ago, that kind of scared me. Mm-hmm. But I think Sony's made a couple of really big mistakes. And
wait, which one do you like? High definition DVD or a Blu-ray?
Well, I have neither, so.
But why did it scare you that they're going with Blu-ray?
Well, it's just that there seems to be a little bit heftier support on Blu-ray right now.
Okay, so you're thinking that it's leaning towards Blu-ray.
But HD DVD is out right now.
Right.
So
kind of complicated.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen a player yet that can do both at the same time.
Which was released first? VHS or Beta? I don't remember.
Beta Max was released.
Beta actually came out first?
Beta Max was, well, you know, I could be wrong here, but it's the better quality.
So, rub it in, guys.
So the recommendation that we have is don't buy a system that's Blu-ray or HDTV because we don't, or HD DVD, because we don't know which it's going to be.
That's really for early adopters right now.
That's right. So you got to wait. But November, maybe
a year?
You know, 6 months, we might, or even 4 months, we might be in a situation where we can recommend strongly in one way or the other. I think by that December buying time, we're going to know which one we recommend.
Now, look how bad capitalists we are. We're not telling people, just buy both.
Oh, no.
You can have them sitting right next to each
other. Well, Didi's kind of saying that.
Seriously,
she's saying,
TV will be worth it.
Yeah. So get a good television, DLP television. Get the Wii is what Didi's saying for the gaming, and then wait on the HD content because the television will work on it, and you'll be able to play games until you can get your high quality movies.
So the you say DLT?
DLP.
DLP. That's a type of HDTV.
Yeah. What does that stand for, Miles or Didi?
I unfortunately don't remember.
Luckily, we have Google in front of us, and somebody will look it up.
DLP has been used. It's been around for years. That's what a lot of the digital screens that you see in movie theaters are. They're DLP projectors.
So is that like a hardware spec, or is it a brand name?
It's a type of television.
Versus a CRT, which is a big tube, or LCD, which is a
liquid crystal display.
It's a hardware format.
Yes, it's a way you make a television.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
It tends to have crisper blacks than LCDs.
Doesn't it have a shorter lifespan than LCDs, though, Didi?
It's newer technology. That might change.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for the call.
Thanks a bunch.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That stands for Digital Light Processing. Oh, that clears it up.
Unlike LCD, which is
also digital light
well,
no, processing.
Well, I mean, LCD liquid crystal display. Like, right. It tells what it is.
Right.
Digital light processing. There's what?
Optical interface system. What? Okay. From Santa Cruz, Danny, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, how are you?
Quite well. What's your question?
A question on the new Mac Intel. I'm actually a Windows developer. Wanted to see if the new boot camp would allow me to run all the programs I need to do for developing.
You know what? You are cracking up, and I cannot figure out what you're trying to say, unfortunately. Did Dee Dee or Miles, did you get what he was saying before we lost him?
Developing with Bootcamp Windows.
Can you want to address that, Dee Dee?
I don't have any personal experience with Bootcamp because I don't have an Intel Mac.
Danny, are you there at all still? No, I think we lost him. I'm going to have to hang up. All right. Well, Bootcamp, of course, is this little product released by Apple, which allows you to take an Intel Macintosh and boot Windows on it. We've done it at school. It works. The drivers are better supported now. You can actually do the Wi-Fi and all those things that come with the Intel machine. But, of course, the question that springs to mind as a Macintosh user is, why would you want to put Microsoft OS on your Macintosh? Because Mac OS X is such a great app. But, of course, for backwards compatibilities and stuff, great. The thing with the Intel Macs is that you can't really run Photoshop on them. You can't. I mean, there's a lot of problems. So
you
I guess
could
you could
if you booted Windows
you
on
could
it.
Put Windows on it and run it. Our lines are open. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You're listening to Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me is Miles Elam, and on the phone is Dee Dee Hubbard. Dee Dee spent the week at E3 in Los Angeles, the Electronic Entertainment Expo, and we've been talking about games and all that stuff, but we got another 15 minutes, and we can take your calls with questions and comments about technology. Ask us anything. We can confuse and delight. Phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877.
And stay tuned for a special Mother's Day Castle Cottage hosted by Julie Olson Edwards. Music, stories, and messages in Spanish and English from children throughout the county. Today, from 11 o'clock to 12 o'clock after Geek Speak.
It's just 12 minutes away, so pretty cool. And we do have our phone lines open. We are able to take your calls with questions and comments of technology. One more time, the phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And we're going to go ahead and take a call from Carmel Valley. John, welcome to Geek Speak. Hello, John.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what's your question?
A kind of strange question. I used to be on the Dish Network, and I gave it up both because I didn't want to pay the monthly fees and also because I was an addict, a TV addict. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to at least watch a little again, but I'm too cheap to pay any of the cable or the Dish-type network fees. Supposing you were on a desert island, you had a TV set. I do have one. What would you use or could you use or is there anything to just get the most rudimentary kind of TV reception? Or is that still possible?
I wish we had our KUSP engineer here who could tell us a lot about what's going on with broadcasts. Radio is still nice and strong in the broadcast space, but television broadcast is dependent on the local broadcasting companies. And
in
they're
Santa
competing.
Cruz, I get two versions of NBC.
two NBC versions that are both staticky, right?
Yeah.
The way to do it is to find your local television stations, and you know, sometimes you'll see the vans show up at the courthouse and stuff, right? And find out where their transmitters are. They're going to have on top of mountains around you. They're going to have antennas that are transmitting their signal, and they're mandated relatively soon to switch over to a digital signal. And if that happens, then you'll have to get a digital receiver, which is going to be more expense, but at least it won't be a monthly expense. Basically, these stations broadcast in the same, you know, airspace, if you will, public airspace, their signal, and you can pick it up with if you have an antenna and you're in the right area, just like the radio. And it's as simple as that. The trick is really finding out what you can get in what area. There's got to be websites for this, too. But it's going to be limited because there's only going to be a certain amount of stations that do it, and you're going to be stuck on those shows. Those stations, but at least they're local stations, right? So they're going to be covering the news that you're interested in, and they'll cover your community. Miles, did you get any more on that?
There's a couple of alternative ways to get content. Netflix is a good way. If you don't mind, you know, time shifting your show by 6 months after it's finished. You could just put the DVDs on your queue. You can also go through iTunes Music Store, or I think CBS, NBC, and Fox are downloading shows now.
And they charge for it, right?
Yeah, it's a couple bucks per show, but it's one way to do it without paying $50 a month or $20 a month.
And paying for it that way might help with the whole, being addicted to television, because every time you decide to watch a show, you've got to invest money in it. And really, if you're watching maybe two shows and each of them come out once a week, and they're charging $1.50 or something like that, that's still not a very bad price. It's like $8 of television a month. So not that bad. There's one other way, and that we kind of touched on earlier, is to download it through BitTorrent, which is illegal, people do it all the time. Does that cover that aspect of it?
I was actually thinking along the lines of, for the last 2 years, I haven't had cable, or somewhere thereabouts, and I can't get that many stations off of broadcast, and I don't consider my life to be all that diminished. If you don't have TV... Oh, well. I'm sorry if I'm in the minority when I say that, but oh, well.
Well, John, are you missing television of some kind, or you want something specific?
Well, what I did was I never looked at a guide or any... I never knew in advance what I was going to watch, but if it was winter and I'd come in from outside and it'd be getting dark around 6, I could watch 10 hours straight if I didn't have to get up the next day. And the way I did it was just using the channel selector. I just... If I didn't like anything instantly, I changed it. And I watch a lot of stuff. I'm a information freak and news junkie, and I could go right back to it because it widened my life. It wasn't. I never watched soap operas or sports or any of the stuff that probably the wider audience likes. And so I thought it was worth doing. It just that. Do you want to devote that much time to any one thing? There's only so much time. It's probably our most precious commodity, and I was giving a huge amount of time just to that.
Yeah. Well, if you're looking, if you are in fact a news glut, if you really want to get news to your heart's content, I think the internet's a much better source for that.
Yeah, but I stay away from that because that would probably be worse for me.
It does take some time.
Well, but one way to curb a lot of TV addictions is to just only watch explicit shows, because just channel surfing, if you don't have a time limit, then you can keep going.
You mean specific shows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Explicit has a whole different connotation.
I am on allergy medication. So, okay.
Dee, are you... do you have like a list of shows that you like and you watch, and how do you get those
well,
shows?
Well, I don't know. I've probably mentioned it before, but my favorite show right now is Veronica Mars, and I think it's the best show. It's my favorite show ever.
So you find someone else that has cable, and you go over there and watch it with them every week.
the season one is available on DVD, and I highly recommend it.
So you just go through Netflix and wait a season. Yeah, that's an option.
And that is something about not having a TV, is that if there is a show that I really want to watch, like the Daily Show or something like that, then, oh my God, I have to go visit my friends.
Oh, what a shame. And then one more thing, of course, if you want news and really great entertainment, but you're addicted to television... Listen to the radio more. We're here all the time, 24/7. KSP's here for you.
Well, I do that. Yeah. I'm stuck on that too. I mean, that is where I get most of my news, because I don't take any newspapers. So it is NPR, and I'm now back listening to some of the AM talk shows. Some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's tons of information to be had. It's
definitely
just that I've just cut out TV entirely.
I think that's a good move.
Overall, it is. I'm a great reader, so I probably do a lot more reading now than I would have. Well, I do, but I'm not seeing anything visual. TV does provide that. The radio can't do that.
Sure. All right, we're going to go on to the show. Thank you so much.
Okay, and thank you. I appreciate what you had to say.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Well, just a couple things. I just mentioned a minute ago that Intel, Macs, and Photoshop are problematic. And this issue is this. Adobe has not released Photoshop for the Intel Mac. So if you buy a new Macintosh, which is an Intel Macintosh, and you run Photoshop, which is a pretty process-intensive thing, it's going to have to emulate
the older Macintosh processor in, and therefore run Photoshop slower than you would on like a G5 or even maybe a G4. So if you're a big Photoshop user and you're thinking about buying an Intel Mac, be concerned that the Photoshop won't run that fast. You could, of course, dual boot your Macintosh and buy Windows XP and install that and buy a Windows version of Photoshop, but talk about complicating your life more than you need to do. You can also just suffer until they release the next version of Photoshop, which hopefully will have it, though I hear that it's been quite a difficult problem. I want to address Judith from Watsonville's call. I'm not going to take your call, Judith, and Eric, stay with us for just a second. Judith, the solution to restarting your Macintosh computer from keystrokes. Dee Dee, do you know a keystroke combination besides Quicksilver to restart your Macintosh or shut down your Macintosh?
Well, on PowerBooks, you hit Control Apple and then the power button, it restarts.
Right, but I mean, okay, if that's restarting, I think she's talking about shutting it down.
Shutting it down? If you hit the power button, a little menu comes up.
She's trying to do it from the keyboard, so theoretically, G5 or something like that is what she's using. So the way I would recommend doing this is to do a desktop, you know, shut it down, or to go into sleep mode, whatever you're going to decide to do. Go download an application called Quicksilver, and I just added that the link to that on the GeekSpeak site. And it's basically an application that runs all the time and allows you to do a whole bunch of key command stuff to control your computer. It's a great app. I use it. Miles uses it. Dee uses it. And that is my recommendation for that. We also have a call from Santa Cruz, and we're going to go ahead and take it, I think. Yeah, what the heck. Eric, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello,
what's your question?
I actually have a Unix background, and I never really got 100% comfortable with Windows, but kind of forced to use it. And my laptop, as I've had it for longer and longer, it seems like it becomes slower and slower. And when I look at all the processes that are running, I think a lot of them have been sort of installed on my computer, kind of not explicitly by me, and I just don't know which ones I can get rid of or how to do that, although I have a tech background. So I'm wondering if...
So you basically want to find all these little all these things that are running, find out which ones are what, and stop the ones that you don't need, actually.
Stop them and also prevent them from starting up the next time I boot.
Yeah. Well, what you're going to want to do is, unfortunately, going through the list... I don't have a quick list. There are great sites where you can take a process name. I mean, just take the process name. You control it, delete, so you see the processes. And then take that name and just do a Google search on it. Eventually, you'll find one of these pages that Google responds with is going to be a full list of processes. And hopefully from there, you're going to be able to say which ones you should stop and which ones you should start. Getting familiar with it, killing them discriminately won't do anything for you because it's going to cause your machine to run poorly. But that would be my recommendation is doing some investigation.
I mean, you think if I Google for them... There's a difference between killing them and preventing them from starting
when
I boot up. Where do I go to control it?
If you go to administrative tools, there's services where you can stop the automatic ones from automatically starting on startup and stop them there also. And you also want to check out your startup folder. And there's probably a dozen tutorials on,
And we are running out of time, I just realized. So thank you so much for the call.
Thank
goodbye.
You.
This is GeekSpeak, and we're saying goodbye to our last caller. And Dee Dee, thank you so much for going to E3 and keeping us abreast of all the cool technology that happened this week. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
The other geek this morning was Miles Elam. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBH San Arto, on the web at kosp.org. For KOSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned for a special Castle Cottage Mother's Day issue. But first, stay tuned for the Slow County Report.